This is the This Is Gonna Hurt podcast with J. Gordon Duncan.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the This Is Gonna Hurt podcast with J. Gordon Duncan. If you're wondering why the J, the answer is I am not a bagpipe player. And if that joke doesn't make any sense to you, I encourage you to check out episode 0, where I explain that joke, as well as the purpose of the This Is Gonna Hurt podcast, where we talk about faith, family, fitness, finances, and sometimes fun. Well, friends, thanks so much for tuning in. I appreciate it. And the basement studio this week. Last week it was recorded in the car. Last week I just had some things I had to get off my chest, so I recorded it going down the road. But today, excuse me, I'm sitting in the basement. It's been a great Sunday. Woke up, worshiped with the family. I was able to get a run in. I ran a few errands with Amy and the girls. Took a nap, and now here I am in the studio. So I don't know if you care about my day-to-day schedule on a Sunday, but it's been incredibly relaxing, and I'm very thankful for that. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Amy and I are going to get another walk-in later on today. So I'm excited about that. So listen, I read a book, and it was part read, part listen. I have an app on my phone called Libby, L-I-B-B-Y, and it lets you put in your library card, if you still have one, and then check out both audiobooks and regular books. And so I'm constantly listening to books there. And I purchased Post-Corona from Crisis to Opportunity from Scott Galloway after listening to him on a podcast. And so the book came in and I read about a third of it. And then along the way I realized that I had reserved it in the Libby app and it popped up. And I was enjoying it so much, and I was reading some other things, I thought, well, I'm going to finish this book in audio format. And I'm telling you what, I listened to probably a half of this book in the last 2 days. Way too much information all of a sudden. So I'm going to have to go back. I'm glad I've got the book, because I'm going to go back, and there's some charts on there that are really incredibly important. But essentially, let me tell you a little bit. I want to tell you about Scott Galloway, and then I want to tell you about the book itself. I cannot recommend this book to you enough. If you at all are interested in what you think post-corona life is going to be like, and I mean probably more so in the business, economic, cultural space, not really going to go into what life is like once everybody's got the vaccine or things like that. I'm not going into the weeds there. Please, neither here nor there. It's not what the topic of this one's for. It's really like, what's the landscape of culture and business going to be like? So first of all, Scott Galloway, let me read to you his bio. Scott Galloway is a professor of marketing at NYU's Stern School of Business and a serial entrepreneur. In 2012, he was named one of the world's best business professors. And he has founded 9 companies. He has also served on the board of directors of the New York Times, Urban Outfitters, UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business, and he also has 2 podcasts, which I cannot wait to start devouring. He has 2 podcasts called Prof G and another one called Pivot. And if you want to know more about him, you can find him at section4.com. Now, so he's written this book. And the entire premise of it is, what in the world is life going to be like once this all plays out? He argues that the pandemic's not only been a change agent, it's really been an accelerant of trends that were already underway. While at the same time, there were some things that we just couldn't have looked out for. There were some just things that you couldn't expect. And so I'll give you an example. There's an entire chapter in here, which I think is well-deserved. There's an entire chapter, chapter 4, on higher education, about how higher education has absolutely exploded in terms of cost. And we all know that. And we also know that there's crushing debt that has come along with it, right? And higher education is a $700 billion business. And over the last 40 years, tuition has increased 1,400%. Get that. 1,400% increase in tuition. And you can't argue that higher education has improved that much. And you can't even argue that expenses have even risen that much. It's just, I mean, healthcare has only increased 600% in that amount of time. And so that's crazy that we think healthcare costs are out of control. But higher education, going to a college, is 1,400% more expensive in the last generation. And he goes into great detail about how the pandemic absolutely exposed every single weakness within the higher education system. It exposed how they weren't ready for online education, even though that's been going on. They exposed how all of a sudden that people would be willing to trade a degree in an online setting and give up some of those college experiences. Now, he's not arguing that going to college is unimportant, and he's not arguing that the experience one-to-one is unimportant. That's not his argument at all. He's arguing that they weren't ready. He argued that the pandemic exposed these weaknesses, and the changes that had to happen were absolutely, astronomical. Now, I can say this from personal experience because my oldest, Meredith, is off at college. This is her first year. And she chose to go to college, stay in a dorm room when the overwhelming majority of her classes were online. And that's okay. She wanted as much as she could get the college experience, right? That's what she wanted. And so it's much less of a degree than she would have gotten. But for her, that was incredibly important. And I respect that. I do. But understandably, a lot of students just stayed home. And so they are actually getting a degree, and they're working towards a degree, and they didn't pay for dorm rooms and things like that. And so all of a sudden, everyone's realizing, wait a minute, this system is probably flawed, incredibly flawed. And so he goes on to talk about the impact that this had, because a lot of colleges make their money on international students. They do. For example, most colleges, only 12% of their students are international, right? But their tuition is made up of 28% from those international students. So you see what I'm saying? Only 12% of their student body is international, but they get over a quarter of all their money from international students. And guess what? This year, a lot of them didn't come at all. So all of a sudden, there's panic. And they're realizing you can't just stand in front of a camera and Zoom a class and assume that it's worthwhile for all of that. A lot of people are realizing it's not. So, but he goes in, not only, what I love about this is he not only does he point out what's been exposed and the flaws, is that he makes recommendations and he makes, I guess, predictions. I mean, he's a futurist, if you will. And so I love that. In every single chapter, he makes recommendations like, hey, this is what would work best, and here's what he thinks isn't going to happen. So, I mean, obviously, he recommends that tuition needs to be drastically reduced, right? He feels like endowments need to be taxed. Endowments are that tax-free money that people just throw into colleges. And so, for example, Harvard, MIT, and Yale have over $85 billion in endowments. This is tax-free donations to the school. $85 billion. And he's like, listen, there's got to be a way for that to be changed. I mean, really, truly, they don't need that much money just sitting there. They've got all their buildings. You understand what I'm saying? He talks about Apple and Google and Amazon to get greater involved in the teaching promise. He encourages gap years. He has a stat here that 60% of students who go to college after a gap year take college more seriously. The problem and the reason gap years are not recommended is because a lot of kids then don't go to college. But I guess what that does is it proves that maybe they weren't ready to go to college anyway. And so listen, my college experience is I just decided on a whim and a 15-second conversation to go, but I'm so glad I did. If you'd given me a gap year, I just don't know if I would have made it. But he's arguing maybe gap years are better. That one I struggle with a little bit. He goes on to say that businesses and corporations need to defetishize the university degree. And that one's going to be tough. And he's saying, listen, there's a value in a four-year degree, but maybe value-y certifications and other things in such a way that students and prospective employees can get jobs without necessarily having to do that. Now, he does. He even has a great section on free college, and I know that's a wonderful political debate. Let me read the paragraph he has on free college. This is his viewpoint. He said, "One thing we should not do, free college. That's a populist slogan and a bad idea. It's a further transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich. Only 32% of Americans go to college, and cost is not what keeps the most exceptional kids of any income level from getting to college." That might be debated. "Improve K-12 education, strengthen two-year programs, expand the seats at the best universities, and college becomes an engine of upward mobility without leaving behind the two-thirds of people whom better high school serves well. College needs to be more affordable, but we don't need to subsidize the wealthiest households in America who send 88% of their children to college." He's saying, listen, there is a number of income in this country, and 88% of those folks send their kids to college, right? And giving them free college is not something they need. And so, listen, whether you agree with that or not, I love the deep dive that he does. And he is arguing that what happened is Corona absolutely exposed all of this. Absolutely exposed all of this. And so he's got a whole entire section about disruptors, about like who stepped into this space when all of a sudden coronavirus happened, right? And so he's got this argument about the big four, Google and Facebook, Disney, I mean, and Microsoft, those guys, right? And Apple, and so I think I named five there, sorry about that. But he talks about who is actually stepping in and disrupting in a really good way. And there's it's a fascinating conversation. So he talks about, for example, Zoom. Zoom does not make outrageous claims. He calls it yoga babble. They don't make outrageous claims. And they've actually made an impact, and their stock has risen, right? Spotify, they make some crazy claims. Like their argument is that Spotify says they unlock human potential and give creative artists the opportunity to live off their art. I don't know if any artist who says they live off their Spotify. None of them. And their stock's only risen a little bit. So Spotify necessarily hasn't been a disruptor. Peloton, absolute disruptor. Now, their mission is crazy. On the most basic level, Peloton sells happiness. I don't know if they sell happiness, really. So their yoga babble is really, really high. And believe it or not, their stock return dipped when they released. Now they have absolutely skyrocketed because of coronavirus. And he says, listen, he totally expects at some point in time for them to be purchased, like a billions of billions of dollar purchase. And he expects it to be Apple. He's like, but there is someone who's absolutely disrupting. You have the community you want. You have the workout equipment you need. You don't have to go anywhere to a gym, and you can do any time you want. And it's created like Facebook groups. It's even created dating groups out of it. So absolutely crazy. Those guys have just taken off. So fascinating argument about who's disrupting in the post space. And then he goes on, and I found this really interesting. He talks about some businesses that he believes are going to absolutely explode once coronavirus settles, okay? And so let me share a couple of these with you. He felt like these are companies that both in impact and financially are going to explode, right? He mentions Brooklinen, which are high-end sheets for an affordable price, sheets that would usually sell for $129. They sell for $79, and so these are obviously not just Target or Walmart sheets, but they're high-end sheets, more affordable. They just took off during the coronavirus. Believe it or not, Carnival Cruises. I mean, their stock dropped from $50 a share to $14, but he knows, and we all know, that as soon as these things are safe, people are going to take cruises again, and primarily that is an older population that is dedicated and diehard to it. But he says, you know what? They're going to be back. And so he expects them to take off. They're not disruptors. They're companies that are just going to explode. Lemonade sells insurance for your pets. Crazy. Netflix, he thinks, is just going to continue to explode. They have just gone on and on and on and on. He can't imagine anybody replacing them. But they're just, their stock value is only going to grow. Medical, again, he mentions Peloton. Investing apps like Robinhood, and we can see that now. Shopify, which is one of the few companies that have taken on Amazon for private selling, and they've done it well. Their value has increased 6 times since 2019. And then he talks about his whole section about Tesla, who he feels is drastically overvalued, but they continue to just crush. And so, listen, I can overwhelm you with stats. I mean, he goes on, talks about Uber. He talks about the revitalization of WeWork, who I think is a fascinating discussion. There's a documentary on WeWork on Hulu that I'm going to get to sometime. WeWork is the Airbnb of private office workspace. Warby Parker, who I've talked about before. Warby Parker is the buy your glasses online. They ship 5 of them to you. You like them, and they get them back to you. They definitely have taken down Essilor, who is the world's largest frame and lens manufacturer. They're kicking butt there. So it's a great book. And I hope I haven't bored you with a bunch of numbers, but I really think that it's a fascinating book. And so there are times you get hit with a ton of stats, but that's because he's trying to back up what he is talking about with as much evidence as possible. So the book is amazingly well-researched, really, really well-researched, just absolutely crazy. And there's times that he will just surprise you with not only the stats, but the assessment of the facts and where it's going to go from there. So a couple of things at the end. He makes some final predictions, and he also makes some suggestions of what he'd really like to see happen. He makes an argument for a Corona Core. Like, if the government wants to continue to give out money to people who are struggling, then he argues that the government should create a Coronavirus Core, which would be an organization that would do tracing and other tasks related, and then fund it with these stimulus payments or these monthly payments. And so, hey, if you would like to continue to get these, apply for this job within the Corona Corps. And listen, after 9/11, we created Homeland Security. These things are not uncommon in the country. I thought that was a really interesting suggestion, but one that honestly I look at and I don't think that's going to happen whatsoever. I really don't. But I think it's a good idea. I do support that. But friends, there's a lot here. My excitement has caused me to go a little fast. It's, believe it or not, it's not a huge book. I mean, we're 212 pages. It can be dense. There's some very decent graphs that help you along the way and charts to let you know what's going on. If you can get it on audiobook or you can get it from the Libby app, do it, but it's worth the read if at all you're interested in the economic and cultural landscape as we seem to be turning the corner on coronavirus. At least compared to a year ago, we definitely are in a different place. So friends, Post-Corona, From Crisis to Opportunity by Scott Galloway. Grab it if you can. I think it's a worthwhile read. I enjoyed it a ton. And if you liked this book review, let me know. I haven't done too many book reviews, so if you like it, let me know. I got tons of books I would love to speak to. This one's fresh in my brain, so I was able to hop right back into it since I just finished it yesterday. But friends, as always, if you like this, take a screenshot, share it on your stories while you're working out, tell people you enjoyed it, like it, share it. If you would, go to iTunes or Spotify and give me a 5-star rating and review it. That means a ton. It really does mean a lot to me. As we are now past our 3-year anniversary, well into our 4th year, I've enjoyed it greatly. I am still tracking down this interview, one from New York Times bestselling authors. I'm going to keep after that. Then I've got another local friend who's doing some great things, and the two of us keep trying to get together to plan out our collab. Hopefully that's going to happen soon. We've rescheduled several times, but we got it on the books for next week. So at best, that episode is going to come up in 2 weeks. And I'm sure with the conclusion of next week's Falcon Winter Soldier, I would not be surprised if Emma and I didn't jump in for a review of that, because we definitely enjoyed WandaVision. So, gang, thanks so much for listening, as always, and we will talk to you soon. See you next week.